Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4128 of the Bugle audio newspaper for a visual world, the publication which uncovers the truth and then covers it up again in a comforting layer of bullshit. It's just better that way for everyone. I am Andy Zaltzman once again in our London bunker, underground, hermetically sealed from the outside world. Well, it's a recording studio, it's fairly basic. Last night, I went to see an old friend do his first ever stand-up comedy gig at the end of a comedy course with a load of other people also doing their first ever gig. Today, very much the other end of the experience seesaw with my guests. Two stalwarts of the British comedy world. Al Murray, who I think supported George Formby on his 1947 Banjo Megadick tour.
I did open for George, yeah. Yeah.
And Mark Steele, who played the opening night of Hadrian's Wall.
Died, actually. But,
tough crowd.
Yeah, luckily there was... luckily, there was no one there to record it, to leg it all the way to Carlisle.
So, not often I get to enjoy being the youth policy on the Bugle. This is...
George Formby, in 1947, was very much an activist. He was an anti-apartheid activist. He got thrown out of South Africa for insisting black people were at his gig.
Yeah. And his wife was his manager once. She was really really front foot with.
Yeah, she was also a militant atheist, and they used to go to church every Sunday, and they used to have great big squabbles about that as well.
This is what happens when you get two human encyclopedias onto a show. I spent over a decade building up the Bugle to be somewhere where fact was not allowed. Played no part in this, and you guys come on.
The South African mini, I can't remember, I suppose it would be the foreign minister, but the person responsible for all this said to Mr. and Mrs. Formby one night, you are not to have any more black people in the audience, causing great embarrassment. And in front of a big crowd, she said, it is recorded, piss off, you're a horrible little man.
Yeah.
And that's the point at which they were escorted out of the country.
Yeah.
There we go.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the sound of them being escorted out of the country.
Also, Gracie Fields, militant Trotskyist.
Yeah.
Fought in the Red Army.
So this is issue 4128 of the Bugle.
Are you sure?
But yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Coincidentally, that's the number, the up-to-date number of reasons to impeach Donald Trump. We're recording on the 1st of November, which is World Vegan Day. And to mark this, this issue of the Bugle has been written on meat-free paper made from trees rather than the normal vellum parchment made from calfskin.
And I'm writing this down with an octopus, though.
No animals will be drowned during this recording, so it's lucky John Oliver's not on this show anymore. He loves to submerge a ferret in a large bucket whilst performing. Why do you think he's always behind a desk? Join the dots, people. It's also today is Love Your Lawyer Day, apparently, 1st of November. That's every day for me, in case my lawyer wife is listening. That's my one wife who is a lawyer. I don't have a lawyer wife and other wives covering all the other major professions. On this day in 1503, Pope Julius II was elected Pope. His nicknames were the Warrior Pope and the Fearsome Pope, which are not traditional popey qualities these days, being a warrior and being
fearsome. No. Back then you had to be a badass if you were Pope, didn't you?
I guess, I mean, it's when you're Pope, you've just got to Pope what you see in front of you at the time.
You
can't stick rigidly to a set Poping tactic. You've got to Pope on instinct.
Who was his manager?
Was he a Borgia? Sure. It's that kind of that time, kind
sure
of time, isn't it?
But he did commission the Sistine Chapel ceiling from Mickey Paintbrush himself. And that was exhibited to the public for the first time on this day in 1512. And this is also the first anniversary of me telling you that last year as well.
He fell out with Leonardo, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a terrible fight.
I mean, that just sounds... How has that never been made into a sitcom?
Or you with your ceiling off!
Flick, flick. That woman, she's miserable. Why you paint her?
And, of course, today was supposed to be the 365th year anniversary of Brexit happening. This was supposed to be the beginning of of freedom.
Yep. Well, yeah, we're 12 hours into our robbed freedom. Yes. 12 hours and 15 minutes. I don't know how you feel about it, but I shouldn't have bought those Independence Day October 31st pins.
If my dad was still alive, he'd have bought them. I remember him buying a plate to commemorate Colin Cowdery's 100th century, saying, "That's going to be worth a fortune in years to come, son."
Well, to be honest, if you stick that on eBay, I'll probably bid quite a lot for it. For our American listeners, that is quite a niche cricket reference. It must be the first Colin Cowdery reference we've had on the Bugle. This was supposed to be Freedom Day, the day after Freedom Day. We were supposed to have Brex blasted ourselves to a glorious new future. Marc Francois had predicted that Britain would explode if Brexit did not happen on the 31st of October. The evidence suggests that has not entirely happened yet.
I think he exploded.
Yes.
I'm told. And the police have sealed off the area around his house and have been warned not to approach any of the bits.
Francois fallout would be awful, wouldn't it? You've got Francois all over you.
I'd be like Krakatoa. People would go, "Do you know it covered 1/6 of the globe?"
Sheep with Francois all over them. Can't eat, eat the lamb.
People in the Ukraine. What is this that has landed here?
Well, we are headed for an extended winter, I think. As always, our section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, the charity month of November is upon us once again. Movember, where men grow moustaches for charity. But there are more options this year. There's Fauxvember, where you are sponsored per enemy made, which can be quite lucrative in this day and age. Nosevember. Now, it doesn't take much commitment to wear a moustache for a month in this age of trendy facial hair. But Nosevember is encouraging people to wear a large prosthetic nose for a month. That shows real commitment to your charity. Flovember, where you only accept medical care that would have been available to Florence Nightingale during the Crimean War. Quovember is also available when you only listen to Status Quo for the entire month. Do get psychiatric assistance if you do that. Also coming up next year, Imaginary January, where you divorce yourself from all reality for a month. I don't see how that is different from any other month of the year. Grapeprol, which is a wine awareness month, and Coptober, where you take policing into your own hands for a month by forming your own vigilante force and performing citizens' arrests on anyone you think might have done something wrong. That charity section, in the bin. Top story this week. Well, we didn't get Brexit, but we are getting an election, which is going to be about Brexit, but also leave potentially a government in place for 5 years.
We're going to vote our way out of this, man. We are going to vote until it goes away.
but by not actually voting on it. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the world's most oblique election.
Exactly. You know, the it's, I mean, I'm actually sort of a little bit in love with what's happening at the moment. I love it. It's sort of dazzling. I would dare, when I get the paper in the morning, I sort of dazzled. I daren't look. Sort of look away.
It's a soap opera that has long since gone past the point where you go, oh, no, the equivalent of a plane crashing in the middle of the street that the soap opera's in and stuff. And, you know, one of the main characters turns out to be in ISIS or something. We've gone way past. We've gone way past that now. We think, oh, no, who's written this now?
I wish I could read the history book about this from 150 years' time, you know.
Yes.
And go, oh, well, that's really what was causing it all. Because it's we're in the thicket of it. I mean, I'm sort of in love with it. I'm in love with how ridiculous it is. I love that they shut Parliament in order to defend Parliament's democracy. I just love it. I love it. Do that. Why not? I love it. Yeah.
Nothing would surprise you.
Yeah, exactly.
With Feline Plus, we're only allowed to Europe through a flap and we all have to shit in a tray. That's the result of it. Nothing. If they all, oh, Emily Thornberry campaigned naked today in a canoe. Really?
Yeah. But is that thing, but it, I mean, and all the time backing this up has been, you know, the country's going to explode, there will be riots if we don't leave, and that has not happened.
No.
So they're going to have to stow that, aren't they?
Yes.
As an argument?
Well, I'm going to have to organise some riots.
Well, or organise some riots.
Yes, yeah, Rees-Mogg.
Yeah.
I wanted my 50p to be worth something.
Also, I mean, behind this, we had the Conservative government, when it came in under Cameron, passed the Fixed Term Parliament Act, one of the least necessary pieces of legislation in the glorious British history of unnecessary legislation, that was supposed to fix the term of Parliament, hence the name, and thus reduced the number of times we were inconvenienced by the democracy we keep erroneously being told or we're obsessed with in this country. And under the Fixed Term Parliament Act, this would be the third election in 4 years, just what the British public has been aching for, 6 weeks of concentrated bullshit, bullshattered into their haggard, resigned faces. These are curious democratic times.
Indeed, and as is the Conservative slogan, which is Britain deserves better, which is a perfectly reasonable, if anodyne, slogan if you are the opposition. But when you have been in power for, we deserve better than this utter rubbish, stupid, useless, hideous, monstrous government that has been ruining the country for 9 years.
We've printed the leaflets now. Bloody hell. Of all the slogans, look, admittedly, we've been in and we've been shit, but vote for us again.
Yes, in case it gets worse.
In case it gets worse.
And each time the slogan is, there'll be Labour getting, there'll be a terrible, terrible mess. People may recall there will be, it is either stability with us or chaos with Ed Miliband.
Yeah.
And luckily, we didn't have any chaos at all. And then strong and stable. Yeah. And
also, you've had Boris Johnson, the Archduke of Absolute Drivel, who's been warning people that Brexit would be delayed under Jeremy Corbyn. Now, this is a man who delayed Brexit himself by voting repeatedly against Theresa May's so-called deal, and then delayed Brexit again by chickening out of putting his own so-called deal through Parliament, now warning people that Corbyn will.
Yeah, but that's what this
Brexit.
Is. What how this? This is how this whole thing works. That is simply characteristic of what's happening. You know, it's this. We lost control of our borders in a country on an island where we haven't got any, and we're going to lose control of taking back of the borders we haven't got because of another island with a border that we'd forgotten about. It's sort of perfect. I'm 51 now, and I'm starting to wonder whether this isn't all a simulation.
Right? Oh, like the Matrix.
Yeah, I'm a brain in a jar, and none of this is actually happening. You know, because I the other day I ran into someone who knew someone from school, you know, from my old school, and that's impossible. There's more than 150 people in the world, surely. Right? And what's happening now just feels like you're joking about being like a soap opera, but it feels written. It feels we're living in a parable about the limits of wisdom or something, you know. And one day they'll tell this story as an amazing fable.
And you wonder, was it like this during the Corn Laws and stuff? But then that was relatively short, wasn't it, compared to
Well, that's it. That's what, you know, if you look at historic crises, they tend to sort of end.
Yeah. Well, even the Civil War was only sort of 18 years from beginning to end, wasn't it?
Yeah, well,
really,
yeah.
Sort of thing. So this is going to way, way go past that. There's going to be people as yet not born who, when they're 40, are going to go, I wonder if it'll ever end.
Yeah. Well, people keep joking about how... People keep joking about there'll be a ceremonial thing every year where the EU grants the UK an extension and no one will know what... You know, like why do guardsmen wear bearskins? You know, no one really knows anymore. And they'll go through this ritual and...
I assume that was like a lunch thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a lunch thing, yeah.
And it's just so many people full of... I was sort of came across a tactical, well, somebody showed it me, a tactical voting website. And because I thought, well, I suppose the argument here is that if you're against Brexit or if you particularly don't like Boris Johnson or whatever, because it seems to be in two blocks, doesn't it? There's on the one hand, Farage and Boris Johnson support Brexit and they are of a certain political persuasion. And then you've got everybody else, really, the disillusioned Conservatives, Liberals, the Nationalists in Wales and Scotland, Liberals and Labour. But they're all scrambling for the votes between them, almost as if they don't care if they lose, as long as they get... So the Liberal Democrats sort of seem... Their position seems to be, we don't care if a sociopath runs the country as long as we go up to 23% in Reading West.
Yeah.
And I saw one of these websites, a tactical voting one, where it says, who's got the best chance of beating Boris Johnson? And the Liberal one, it said, it was North East Somerset, 38% is a graph. 38% Conservative, 32% Liberal, 8% Labour. All right. And then at the bottom it said, this is from a poll where people were asked, who would you vote for if the contest was only between the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats? And no other party stood a chance. So that's, oh, you might as well say, who would you vote for, assuming the Labour candidate was Hitler?
Well, this is one of the great problems that we have with our electoral system. That basically means for the vast majority of voters, that's what I mean, that basically means for a huge proportion of the voters in this country, there is absolutely no point in voting for what you actually believe in. So therefore, we have no way of knowing what the country actually thinks. Now, clearly, as a nation, we don't...
But I believe in Father Christmas, and he's not on the balance sheet, is he?
Yeah, as a nation, we don't like to say what we actually feel. We've developed an entire way of communicating that relies on obfuscation and a hinting, and, you know, many marriages have survived decades longer than they would otherwise have done, thanks to that. There are huge social structures for the avoidance of genuine expressions of emotion, and none is more impressive than our voting system, which kind of forces people not to vote in line with what they think. And this is illustrated by this party election broadcast, which came out today. Do you care about the environment? Do you think the economy should be run sustainably at local, national and global levels, and with the goal of social justice fundamental to policy making? Do you believe in electoral reform and an informed participatory democracy and a nation that demands social responsibility from its business? Then why not vote for the Green Party? Because it's f***ing pointless, that's why. Under First Past the Post, you might as well smear a dead ferret's blood on your ballot paper and post it to NASA marked plan for an intergalactic rocket made of ferret's blood as vote green, you idealistic hippie. Hold your nose and vote Labour or Conservative like a good boy and or girl. We've got it f***ing sewn up. It's what we fought the wars for. May not apply if you live in Brighton. Paid for by the British Association of Vested Interests. So it's... I mean, even, you know, all this, the public must have their say, and then we have to speak in tongues.
That's beautiful, Andy.
Thank you.
You actually reached a poetic moment there. That's got to be a first. I mean, issue 4128. There's never been actual poetry on this show.
I don't know. Sometimes I sort of hit a plateau of weary resignation, yeah, and I'm happier then.
Yeah.
And then occasionally, and I know there's going to be one opinion poll that's going to show that the lead has shrunk and Labour are only 34 behind. And I'm going to go, oh, there's a bit of hope.
But the thing that, you know, obviously everything becomes personal in the end, right? This election's happening on my youngest daughter's birthday.
Wow!
That it's ruined. It's ruined. I want to spend a day with a toddler, you know, having fun, not going, oh Christ, what's going to happen? You know what I mean? It's like this government have ruined everything. My daughter's birthday included. And
take cake down to the polling station.
Well, I suppose, yeah, but it means the nursery's shut.
Oh.
So I've got to look after her. That's the actual...
That's the last thing you want to do.
That's the actual ball ache here.
Proper British parenting.
It's just, it has actually ruined the day. Going to have to worry about this shit on her birthday. Anyway.
But I do like it. I never feel so grown up as when I'm voting. I just sort of... I still have that thrill of like... Oh, I'm trusted with this.
Hiring a car is the thing that makes me feel really grown up.
Oh, yeah, are you mad?
Yeah, you keys? You're going to give me the keys? You've never seen me drive. I mean, maybe these are pretty similar, actually. You know, no, you're allowed to vote, yeah. And yet...
Are you suggesting voting licences?
I think I probably am. A voting, you have to do a test, maybe a licence.
And should there then be like a phase where you have like a provisional voting licence, so you don't get all these kids who suddenly qualify to vote and just go out and...
Yeah, definitely. I think we're definitely onto something here.
Breathalysers. This is what they did in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
the number of sitting MPs who are not standing in this coming election, a number of decades long, a number of experienced Conservatives have been basically kicked out of the party for having a different opinion to their crazed leader, and a number of female politicians are quitting politics due to the horrific abuse they receive on social media for the crime of having a womb. I'm not sure we're entirely using freedom of speech that we fought all those world wars for quite the way we should be in terms of, you know, the interaction between politicians.
It's my unalienable right to call a female MP a fucking cow. Right? Back off. It's like Back off.
It's like inheriting a Stradivarius violin and using it as a practice urinal. I mean, you can do it, but you shouldn't do it.
A friend of mine actually tweeted about this morning, and her replies are a sewer you know, and not just of well, they should shut up then or get it, you know, they brought it on themselves. You think, oh Christ,
yeah.
Think that through just for a moment, and then like the men get abused as well, just refusing to address it. I mean, it is grim, and the sort of the state of discourse at the moment is horrible, isn't it?
It's really horrible. Well, I've said some for some time, I think it is actually impossible to come up with any collection of words that you could put on Twitter that wouldn't get a load of abuse.
True.
So you could put, I'm enjoying a delightful sunset across Dorset this evening, and someone would reply, not so delightful if you suffer from sunset aversion Dorset syndrome, actually. Have a thought for sad sufferers in the future, you twat. I put a thing, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I put some inane, stupid thought on Twitter when the election was called, that basically the choice is between people who have f***ed up the country because they're sociopathic, embittered, privileged sadists, and people who are f***ing up everything up because they mean well but just can't get their shit together. And that's sort of... And I thought I was sort of being quite partisan in a way. But, of course, then the abuse from...
Yeah.
The sort of Corbyn dials. How dare you? No, he isn't actually. We have a f***ing idiot. I'm so f***ing twat. Just stop it.
Yeah.
Don't take everything literally.
Yeah.
And just, that's going to work on the doors.
Oh.
Hello, are you going to vote Labour? Well, I might do, but I'm not sure about Mr. Corbyn. You Blairite scum!
Yeah, well,
scum!
Well, f*** off and join the Tories. It's the yeah. No, don't do that. You know, that when you see that, f*** off and join the Tories, you think, you know, that's really, it's an election, it's really, that is really bad advice.
Yeah, we did really well. I've locked on 40 doors and I persuaded all 40 people to do as I said. They're all going to vote for you. No, they've all off and join the Tories. The whole street.
Oh God! I mean, it's 5 weeks, is it? 6 weeks of this shit.
6 weeks, but it will seem like a f*** of a lot longer.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And you know, Christmas as well.
Yes, and also, I mean,
fighting for survival. They've not thought of Christmas has been under attack now for a really long time.
Well, I mean,
which is why it's swollen up like a pufferfish into August. But Christmas is under attack, and this is going to get in the way of defending Christmas.
Well, this is the problems of the logistics of a winter election, because generally our elections are in April or May. Yeah. Christmas has had to be delayed by 4 days because of the 12th of December election, meaning that Advent can only start on the 13th of December, so that it is not politically biased. even then, by speeding up the time of Advent, that means Christmas, the earliest Christmas can fall is the 29th of December, and Santa may just bin Britain off this year.
Well, Santa wears a red outfit. I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
How political is that?
Yeah.
He's going to have to wear, like, a red outfit with a half red, half blue.
Or come round twice with different...
Well, he's not going to come round
with electoral broadcasting.
He's not going to come round on the night of the 28th or the 29th, and I quote from his official press release, I don't... get out of bed until January the 10th as per. So the Bugle will be the official podcast of the British election for the next 6 weeks. World news now, and assassination news. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the ISIS leader and renowned deranged mega has in well, the words.
When I
used,
come on this, I was. What's the language policy? I can never remember.
There it is.
Yeah, there it is.
I think it was John. You might remember this, Chris. John Senior, the wrestler, talking about Osama bin Laden when we cover that. He's compromised to a permanent end. He was killed in an operation. Baghdadi was tracked down using his own underpants. This was a delightful detail of this. He had his underpants stolen by a local Syrian undercover spy, then analysed to prove that it was definitely him. They were analysed by underpants specialists who proved that they were the kind of pants that only a really awful terrorist warlord would wear. His al-Baghdadi's gimp mask and bondage kit also returned positive samples, and the karaoke machine hacked into in his lair had an absolutely appalling playlist that proved he must have been an irretrievable shithead. So they knew who it was. He was then killed in an American operation, buried like his predecessor as World Shit of the Year, Osama bin Laden, at sea. Which again raises the horrifying prospect that next time you go swimming in the sea or surfing or whatever, you might accidentally swallow a molecule that used to be part of
Al-Baghdadi's and if there's a Francois fallout shower as well, I mean, it's a double whammy.
Keep your mouth shut when you're in the sea. Donald Trump described the operation, said they did a lot of shooting and they did a lot of blasting, which, man, it's good to have that level of insight into the intricacies.
Like listening
of
to listening to Eisenhower. Military strategies.
I mean, this whole thing, he went and blew himself up, didn't he? So, yes. So basically, the Americans turn up, he runs away and kills himself. And they're saying they killed him.
A goal is still a goal.
It doesn't really matter how you get the goal.
It's like an own goal.
There's a lot of pressure that led to it.
Trump praised, this is more detail on the operation, they even didn't go through the front door, he said. Now, you would think to go through the door. If you're a normal person, you say, knock, knock, may I come in? But they blasted their way into the house through a very heavy wall. Well, it's just lucky they don't get normal people to do these operations.
Well, this is why they're special forces. They're not normal forces, are they?
First thing you learn in the SAS. Don't ever use a door, even at home. Don't even look at that doorbell, son. That's they have to be paid a fortune. They have to rebuild the house three times a day.
Trump added they were like digga 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 kaboom digga digga digga, and then it was like fiow, and it was so cool. He praised the a dog that was using the operation that sadly got injured, and even tweeted a picture that a sort of mocked up picture of him putting a medal around
that picture
dog's neck
is amazing.
Yeah,
have you seen that picture?
Yeah, it was a guy who'd fought in Vietnam.
Yeah, rescued 10 people injured in a firefight, blah, 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 blah.
Get rid of him.
But round the... it's such a bad Photoshop that the... and also the dog's classified 1 minute and then not classified the next and Trump's or whatever. It is amazing.
I mean, this is the world we're in now, though.
Yeah, and that medal has a paw on it as well. It's a medal of a paw, which is really, really funny. But it's the world, like you say, it's the world we're in.
It doesn't matter. You used to sort of, all the people now who are sort of trying to go, look, he's told a lie. Well, don't waste your time trying to bring him down by exposing he's told a lie.
Yeah.
He'll just go, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
And I was an astronaut this morning.
Yeah,
my dad invented zebras. There's no point trying to expose it. He don't care.
I do feel sorry for this dog. A very badly timed take your pet to work day. Almost as badly timed as when I was working in that lion sanctuary and I had to look after Uncle Shmooley's pet baby wildebeest. But also Trump said, not only did he pay tribute to the Special Forces dog, but he also said that Al-Baghdadi died like a dog. So what is the dog community thinking now about Trump's attitude? I mean, presumably left in the same state of confusion over exactly what Trump thinks of them as the human community. Must be very confusing for the poor animals. Al-Baghdadi was 4-time World Baddie of the Year. That's a hotly contested title. So much competition these days, and it's so hard to quantify all the different skills on display from the leading contenders. But his death will no doubt bring an end to all the violence in the entire region and the war on terror in general, ushering in a new era of worldwide peace and tolerance, just like the death of bin Laden did.
Have there been any politicians who've done the more classic, old-fashioned politician route and gone, although we had many differences, Baghdadi was a colourful character?
Well, there was the whole thing, wasn't there, with the New York Times or the Washington Post, where their obituary headline to start with was promising footballer.
That's an angle we can relate
promising
to.
Footballer and devout cleric. Yeah. Baghdadi dies, we can go that way if you want, but that's not the thing really that we know him for exactly. It was really funny, and they changed it quite quickly because they caught with their trousers down. But I mean, you know, it's that thing of killing the leader. It's purely symbolic, isn't it? You don't achieve anything, do you?
Well,
it's not even like killing the leader. If you could have assassinated Hitler in 1942,
yeah.
That, would have been worthwhile, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have definitely changed things. Yeah,
so, not 1932, even more so. I mean, not in 2022. You might have just got away with it, frankly.
Yes, maybe that'll be the Trump's next thing is just to assassinate random people on the off chance they become dictators 11 years later.
I could see into the future, and he was going to turn out to be a really bad man. But what?
Trump also said that al-Baghdadi died like a coward, and a transcript from the operation just released exclusively to the Bugle does confirm that al-Baghdadi's last audible words were, "You can't shoot me, I have bone spurs in my heel. Ow, ow, sorry guys, love your work." Well, they have named his replacement. It's not Jose Mourinho. They've gone with Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qureshi. So they've disappointed fans of 1980s British wrestling by not replacing al-Baghdadi with al-Giant Haystacksy. Was that worth it? I don't think so. But I was wondering
earlier on. I was wondering. There's not a Big Daddy. There's not a Big Daddy pun in this.
Yeah, you're quite right.
It's impossible.
Promising wrestler and without clue. That's probably what it really was when he was dying like a coward.
The new leader. Al-Hashimi al-Qureshi has yet to do his unveiling press conference like football managers do. It'll be interesting to see what fresh ideas he brings to the ISIS franchise, because it's been struggling for a while, really not getting the neutral fans on its side with this rather unattractive style of play. So,
did he kiss the badge?
Well, I hope so. Quiz time now. I've got a quiz question for you, gentlemen. Fill in the blank. A scientific report have shown that blanks have grandiose delusions about themselves and a complete absence of shame, empathy or guilt. Blanks infuriate other people but are less likely to be stressed themselves and have a tendency to trample over others and leave a trail of damage around them while seeming to be insulated against feeling bad about themselves. Blanks are also prone to high self-confidence and a sense of self-importance. So are blanks A, narcissists, B, Tories, C, D, all high-level politicians, E, especially some current presidents and prime ministers, F, movie moguls, G, primary school teachers, H, nuns, I, all men, J, not all men, K, hamsters, or L, celebrity chefs?
Oh, I thought it was lollipop ladies as you were reading it.
Right.
It's one of the more lukewarm introductions I've had. Is it narcissists, Andy?
It is, yes. They've done a scientific report. I mean, that is the correct answer, A, and also B to L. Some of B to L. maybe not the nuns and the primary school teachers. Queen's University in Belfast conducted a scientific study into narcissism and then typically published the results to try and make everyone say, well done, you aren't you f***ing special. When I do a piece of scientific research, I do the humble thing and keep them to myself, like my groundbreaking study on the impact on the human body and mind of going to 31 World Cup cricket matches in 6 weeks. Turns out it works. And also my study on the effectiveness of sacrificing 100 head of oxen to Zeus in order to get England to win a Rugby World Cup. We will find out how effective that is tomorrow. Anyone want an ox carcass? I've still got 80. If it wasn't for Halloween last night, I'd still have 99. Trick-or-treating has never been so much fun or so logistically challenging. Anyway, what were we talking about before I went on that self-indulgent digression? Narcissism. Yeah. The report found that narcissism is on the rise. Hard to see why that would be, other than social media encouraging us to show ourselves off all the time and political economic systems that keep telling us how f***ing special we are. But, I mean, is this the... Are we going to... Just keep getting. I mean, the narcissism graph, is it going to just carry on until we are all just eternally self-obsessed and sit by mirrors in darkened sheds? And would that actually be a step forward for humanity?
I'm on social media all the time, and I absolutely love it. And so this, it feels like you've brought me on to talk about myself. Yeah, I mean, is it necessarily bad narcissism? This is
what the report's saying, that it's not necessarily bad for you personally as a narcissist, but it does, as we're seeing, I guess it depends what you use
your narcissism for.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I wonder whether one sort of possibility, because it strikes me that it's still a minority of people that are really arseholes, aren't they?
Yeah.
And but so much of what we have to do in life is clearing up after this minority of, like, really, I don't know, 3% of arseholes. Yeah. And I wonder whether one possible way out of this is to have an arseholes island and you just put all of them... I reckon the Isle of Wight, right, could probably accommodate...
That's a TV show of the millennials.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Isle of Wight could accommodate... I'd be fair, I'd go £5 million to anyone on the Isle of Wight. You relocate anywhere in the world, Barbados, anywhere you want to go. And then all these arseholes are just going round shouting each other, you know, shit, writing horrible things about each other on Twitter and Facebook and calling each other wankers and not doing the washing up until all of Ventnor is just washing up. And... And, you know, we're surrounded with barbed wire and snipers and that, so they can't get out because they'll be going, why should I have to go? All these anti-freedom of movement people. Oh, I don't want to be free to go anywhere. I don't want anywhere to come here or go anywhere. I don't even want to go to the co-op. And you can just stand there, so no one can get in, no one can get out. They'll be perfectly happy.
They'll have a cracking cricket team, though, won't they? That's where it's going to end up. You know, we tried this before with Australia.
Right. Yes.
And now look where we are.
Came back to bite. Sport now, and it's the Rugby World Cup final tomorrow morning. This is very exciting. By the time you listen to it, it will probably have happened, Buglers. The Bugle began its existence with an England-South Africa Rugby World Cup final in 2007. Will it end its existence with an England-South Africa Rugby World Cup final? That depends on who makes the final in the year 2207. But in the meantime, there is another England-South Africa Rugby World Cup final tomorrow morning. As we record the
I heard the radio presenters this morning talking with an appalling complacency, and I thought, oh no,
yeah,
where's the victory parade going to be? No,
no, no, no, no,
no, no, no, no, stop, no. Well, we should say that, you know, there's still work to be done here, but oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's no good.
No, well, I'm sure Eddie Jones won't be giving it any.
No, he won't be interested in that, will he? But
they're up against South Africa, who generally play rugby with all the joy of a 1970s Soviet missile parade. attempt to grind their opponents with their sheer force of inescapable physical tedium so that they end up questioning the purpose of existence and fall to their knees in a scrum conceding a penalty. That's largely the way South Africa goes about their matches.
So how do England counter that then? Go wide, is it? Does that help?
Ooh, well, I don't know.
How wide can you go? Can you go out the stadium?
You don't let them do the stalemate that they'll try and do. Because they basically attrited Wales, didn't they? They ground them down.
If both sides try to avoid a stalemate, then that becomes a stalemate of its own.
Oh, God!
So
Brexit all over again.
Negative stalemates, yeah. South Africa captained by Siya Kolisi, the first black captain of the South African rugby team. So if they win, it will be a hugely symbolic moment for a sport which in South Africa was for so long a symbol of apartheid. But England have it within their power to crush that potential iconic landmark for human equality.
You know what? That's the same spirit. And when you go on a thing like... I did the celebrity chase last year and I got 80 grand out of the opening stage and then we lost the money. And Paul Sinner afterwards is going, well, you know, I'm competitive. What can you do? And I was going to build a fucking orphanage with that money. I was going to build a school in rural Cambodia with that money. And now we can't build a school. Like, fucking knock it off, you wankers.
Because you've got the year that Sunset Boulevard was made 1 year out.
Yeah, exactly. And you could see him relishing defeating us. And you're like, you absolute... Anyway, shouldn't be allowed.
Well, to be honest, when we started this podcast, I was not expecting Paul Sinha to be called an absolute.
he's a lovely bloke and everything. But in that, would he in go that, on in the, that particular clinch?
Would he go on Island? Shanklin welcomes Paul Sinha. Oh, even the are going. He knows everything. Knows everything. Asked him who won the 10-pin bowling championship in 1920. Knew it.
I'll have to get him on the show to have a right of reply to this. Quick other bit of sports news. The World Series was completed this week in baseball. The Washington Nationals were during Game 5 in the process of going 3-2 down to the Houston Astros, at which point Donald Trump appeared on the big screen in the stadium and was booed by the entire crowd in Washington, who started up a chant of lock him up, as he was hoisted by his own twattishly infantile batard. The Nationals were then blessed by some higher being and rewarded for their fans chanting truth to power, and won the final two games of a bizarre series in which the home team lost all seven matches. So that just shows the power of sport.
Beautiful.
That brings this week's Bugle to a close. Mark, Al, thanks thanks very much for...
Always a pleasure.
Don't forget to book your tickets to my Andy Zoltzen's 2019 The Certifiable History at the Soho Theatre from the 16th of December to the 4th of January. Until next time, goodbye. We will now play you out with more lies about our premium-level voluntary subscribers.
If Rob Abraham were to become trapped in a Groundhog Day-type situation, he would like it to be on a slow news day globally, ideally on a weekend when he had not much on, so he could just kick back, relax, absolutely nail the cryptic crossword, and occasionally make consequence-free prank phone calls to local radio stations. Simon Brooke thinks the 1995 hit song One of Us by Joan Osborne should not have asked, "What if God was one of us?" but should have asked a more interesting question, such as, "What if ducks could speak Russian?" Or, "What if Stalin had become a ballet dancer instead of a despot?" Or more pertinently, "What if God had a head like an orange?" Neha Sami is pleased that we cannot hear the internal monologue of domestic cats and dogs. Neha does not think we would enjoy what we heard, and that if we knew what they really thought of us, it could do irreparable damage to the relationship between our great species. On a similar theme, Jacek Szaraski suspects that most emotional support animals don't really give a shit about the inner lives of their owners. Even if they're 20% as anthropomorphic as we like to kid ourselves they are, says Jacek, they're probably thinking about food, sleep and sex at least 99% of the time. Nick Rosansky uses an internet radio to listen to travel bulletins from notoriously vehicle-clogged cities such as Dhaka in Bangladesh. It makes Nick feel like he's driving really fast wherever he lives. Matt Robinson wonders what terms were used for officious types before the term pen pusher came into being. Perhaps chisel chasers, or stylus sticklers, maybe even quill quibblers. We just don't know. Ben Alford wonders if there will ever be an unethical veganism movement for people who only want to eat vegetables purely for reasons of taste, but are absolutely fine with humanity exploiting the natural world. Could aubergines be battery farmed, asks Ben. Well, why not? Imogen Cassidy likes to think that if she ever becomes a ghost, she would be a positive, encouraging one, trying to support loved ones in the living realm with motivational hauntings, rather than the hackneyed old pseudo-spooky negativity that so many ghosts seem to go in for these days. Philip Hand thinks there should be a compulsory period of meditation before anyone votes in any election or referendum anywhere, and that this period of meditation should last for a minimum of 10 minutes and a maximum of 5 years. If Rudy Millard ever becomes a member of the English nobility, whether by marriage, raffle, or surprise discovery of an antecedent, he would like to title himself Baron Wilderness of the Soul. Samuel Price is not looking forward to Judgment Day, if it ever happens. Not because he has anything to hide, particularly, but it just sounds like there would be a hell of a lot of hanging around waiting. There would, notes Samuel, be, quote, shitloads of admin to do for whoever ends up running the gig. And Rachel Scott Halls wonders, given that riding a bike is called bicycling, if former 1950s First Lady of the USA Mamie Eisenhower ever climbed on her husband's back while he was on all fours looking for something he dropped on the floor and shouted, "Look everyone, I'm icicling." Here endeth this week's lies. The t-shirts and some added goodies will be sent out imminently. Apologies for the delay. My fault entirely.